Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI appeals to world leaders to reject violence. An English bishop brings us a first-hand description of the difficult scenario in Zimbabwe. The recently celebrated International Day for Literacy focuses on the link between literacy and peace. From the Adriatic port city of Ancona this Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI raised an appeal to world leaders to always reject violence as a solution to problems. The Pope had flown into the eastern Italian city to preside at the conclusion of the 25th Italian National Eucharistic Congress, but during the midday Angelus, for a second straight day, his thoughts went to September the 11th of 10 years ago. Lydia O'Kane reports.
During the midday Angelus recited in the Adriatic port city of Ancona, Pope Benedict said his thoughts went to the September the 11th of 10 years ago and the victims of the terrorist attacks on New York's Twin Towers, on Washington and on Pennsylvania.
Oggi il nostro pensiero va anche all'11 settembre di 10 anni fa.
He entrusted the victims and their families to the Lord of Life and invited the leaders of nations and men of goodwill to always refuse violence as the solution to problems, to resist the temptation toward hatred, and to work in society inspired by the principles of solidarity, justice, and peace.
Ispirandosi ai principi della solidarietà, della giustizia e della pace.
An estimated 100,000 people attended the Sunday liturgy, which saw Italy's biggest shipyard transformed into an open-air cathedral. They had gathered for the week-long Congress in Ancona on the theme, The Eucharist for Everyday Life, inspired by the passage from the Gospel of John on Christ's sermon on the bread of life.
L'uomo è incapace di darsi la vita da se stesso.
In his homily, Pope Benedict said, In the Eucharist, God offers us the path to avoid indifference to the fate of our brothers and sisters, and that above all else, we must recover the primacy of God in our world and our lives, starting from the Eucharist.
Siete chiamati a servire come pastori la comunità ecclesiale che è Familia di famiglie.
Sunday afternoon, addressing priests and families gathered in the Cathedral of Ancona, Pope Benedict reaffirmed the importance of celibacy for priests. He concluded his one-day pastoral visit to the Eastern Italian Diocese with a call to priests to be welcoming and charitable with those who are having problems in upholding their marriage commitments and with those who unfortunately have failed to do so. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
Thanks there to Lydia O'Kane for that report. I came across a photograph showing a congregation of Zimbabwean Anglicans meeting to pray at the local swimming pool. That's because, I discovered, of an ongoing campaign by a breakaway bishop who was excommunicated in 2007 to seize church properties. His refusal to step down has also resulted in acts of intimidation and harassment of priests who continue to work and celebrate religious services for the Anglican Church in Zimbabwe. Knowing of my interest for the plight of the people of Zimbabwe, my colleague Philippa Hitchin put me in contact with an Anglican bishop who has recently returned from a visit to Harare. His name is James Langstaff, and he is the Anglican Bishop of Rochester, which I discovered has a special link with Harare.
Every Church of England diocese has one or more overseas links, both within the Anglican Communion and ecumenically, and one of our Anglican Communion links is the Diocese of Harare, yes.
What does that imply?
They vary a lot, these links, depending upon the nature of the places. But it is a fellowship of prayer and sometimes of financial support and usually of exchange visits and those kinds of things between the two dioceses. And it varies a lot in the shape it takes. But I've just been for my first visit in my capacity as Bishop of Rochester because I was keen to try and visit our linked dioceses as soon as possible after my arrival here.
Maybe also because the situation in Harare is a very delicate and particular one. Can you give me a bit of background? What did you discover when you were there? What did you know you were going towards?
The Anglican Church in particular is going through difficulties because the former bishop of the Diocese of Harare, who was excommunicated by the province of Central Africa a few years ago, is still very much in evidence and is claiming legal ownership of all of the properties belonging to the Diocese of Harare. Therefore, most of the congregations have been evicted from their church buildings and are meeting in borrowed premises or in marquees out in fields. And just at the moment, he's going through a series of attempts to evict clergy from their homes. So that clearly has really serious consequences for the clergy and their families. And that was going on even while I was there.
So there's actually a rift between, let's say, two different Anglican bodies in Zimbabwe.
Not really bodies, because the ex-bishop, Bishop Kanunga, hasn't really got any people. He's not got congregations. He's just got the buildings and a few priests. Including some who he has ordained himself since he broke away. So the congregations have remained loyal to the bishop, Bishop Chad Gandia, who's the new bishop, and they are meeting, and indeed they're growing quite significantly during this time of persecution. So it's a strange arrangement. It's not exactly a split in the sense that the body of the church hasn't split. It's just this one person, really.
I can assume that he has the support of the ruling party.
Well, it's difficult to tell because there are certainly people within the government circles who are not supportive of him, but he certainly seems to have some influence and some support from some sectors. The difficulty is that government there is a coalition now, and it's really quite hard to say, the whole of government is on his side, because it's not the case. There are people within government who are supportive of Bishop Chad and the continuing life of the Diocese of Harare. But clearly, Kanunga has some support from some people, whether that's because he pays for it or because they are politically aligned with him, it's hard to say.
I've heard reports of some really serious harassment against priests. Would you confirm that?
Yes, I mean, while I was there, there was one priest who was quite badly hurt by people seeking to take possession of his property. There have been others since, and indeed Bishop Chad himself, and this has been reported publicly, his house was broken into with him and his family there the other day, and all their communication equipment was taken, phones and laptops and such like, and he and his family had to be lying on the floor for quite some time while the house was ransacked around them, and that's their own property. It's not church property. It's their own private property, that house. It is a difficult situation.
Did you travel around the country at all?
Not on this occasion, because our link is specifically with the Diocese of Harare rather than the whole nation. And it happened that when I was there, there was a four-day diocesan conference for clergy and lay leaders, so most of my time was with them. But I also was able to visit one of the parishes on the Sunday and preach there, and was amazed by the liveliness and the positive attitude. I mean, the Christians' view there, the Anglican Christians, is that they're going to come out of this, they're going to come through it, and they're full of hope, despite the difficult time they're having.
You're absolutely right. The Zimbabweans are incredible people in this sense.
Yes.
It's been a long time now. As far as your stay there, what feeling did you get? Was it easy for you to get around, to speak to people?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, I went in fairly quietly. I mean, it wasn't a sort of publicised visit, but I wasn't hiding the fact that I was a bishop or anything like that. And we travelled around, and Bishop Chad talks about there have been occasions when he has feelings he's being followed and things like that. But by and large, the view is that we get on and do what we think it's right to do and not allow this situation to unduly prevent the continuing life of the church.
Since the swearing-in of this government of national unity, which hasn't borne the fruits that were hoped, there has been a change in the economic situation in Zimbabwe.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit of how the people generally are living today in Zimbabwe?
Well, obviously, I only saw Harare and indeed only parts of Harare. If you are a professional person living in Harare and you've got a job, then a lot of the sort of things that we might be used to from Western society will be there. And the new city council in Harare has done a great deal so that the normal things of life happen. You know, the rubbish is collected, the streets are cleaned, there are shops there, you can go out to meals. So for some people, life is certainly a great deal more stable than it was, and certainly economically things are more stable. There are still huge disparities between rich and poor. And if, as my colleague who went with me did, if you go and stay in the townships, clearly there's an awful lot of poverty there still. But in some ways, yes, things have stabilized. But clearly the political situation rather than the economic situation is still difficult and uncertain. And as you've indicated, the government of national unity is operating, but it's not at ease with itself, I don't think.
I understand they're also working towards an early election, which most analysts and church leaders are counselling against because the time is not ready. There's no new constitution. Did you see any signs of political activity in the streets, of canvassing, anything like that?
Not when I was there, no. And clearly, I mean, those are decisions which are for Zimbabweans themselves to take. And I think for people like myself, we need to be fairly reticent about what we say because it's their nation. What I would say is that the Anglican congregations, despite their persecution, are absolutely clear that they are loyal Zimbabweans. They pray for their president, they pray for their prime minister whenever they meet together, and they want to see their country fulfill all its potential, because it's a great country with loads of potential, tremendous resources of people and natural resources as well. And the Christians there want to play their full part in their country's renewal and revival.
So you're hopeful for the future of this nation?
I think in the long term, one's got to be, because it's got so much going for it. It's got tremendous people. It's got a very strong and vibrant, wider ecumenical Christian community. And it's got tremendous natural resources. I mean, it's one of the countries in Africa that has the potential to feed itself and more, you know, to be a resource for other African countries as well. And that's got to be good. And there are some very skilled people there too, some well qualified people within Zimbabwean society who have great potential for the building of their nation.
That's true, and maybe if the situation stabilizes more, a lot of skilled people will return to Zimbabwe, because so many have left to seek a better, you know, present in South Africa and in other countries.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful place, and one of the joys of being there for the first time, and I went as a tourist several years ago, but going in a different capacity this time, was to meet some of the people. I mean, the Diocesan Standing Committee, which is their sort of main administrative body, includes some very gifted lay people who are well qualified and in important roles in their secular life as lawyers and accountants and business people and so forth. It's a very skilled people, and it's great to see them as part of the life of the church as well.
Can I ask you just one last question? Did you have any contact with Catholics in Harare?
Not on this visit. It was a very short visit, and I'd say most of it was taken up with this diocesan conference. But certainly I'm planning to go back next year, if possible, in June, for a more extended visit, and I'm sure that will be an opportunity to meet a wider group of Christian people from different denominations on that occasion. But I do know that, Bishop Chad greatly values his links with the other denominational leaders in Zimbabwe, and many of them have expressed support. And indeed, some of our displaced congregations are meeting within the buildings that belong to other denominations and have been given hospitality in that way.
Well, I know that the Catholic community is going through much the same situation.
In fact. Yes. And so, you know, there's a mutuality of support there, I think, among the different Christian denominations, particularly those ones that are facing difficulties.
Thank you very, very much. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I think simply that we in the Diocese of Rochester hugely value this link. I mean, it broadens our outlook quite apart from anything else. And we're looking actively at possibilities for example, some of our younger priests to go out there on placement to get experience of the church in a different culture. And so quite apart from what we may be able to give to the church in Zimbabwe, there's a huge amount that they can give to us. And we're looking forward to developing that in the years that lie ahead.
That was the Anglican Bishop of Rochester, James Langstaff. The focus of this year's International Literacy Day, celebrated worldwide on the 8th of September, was on the link between literacy and peace. On International Literacy Day each year, UNESCO reminds the international community of the status of literacy and adult learning globally. Despite many and varied efforts, literacy remains an elusive target. Some 793 million adults lack minimum literacy skills, which means that about one in six adults is still not literate. 67.4 million children are out of school, and many more attend irregularly or drop out. I spoke to UNESCO's Clinton Robinson, a senior program specialist with the education sector, about the significance of this annual occurrence, about this year's theme, about what literacy actually means, and about how each and every one of us can participate in building a more literate world.
The percentage of people who are literate, adults over the age of 15 is the category we normally use for this, is about 88%, which sounds quite reasonable until you realize that actually the number of people, the number of adults without literacy amounts to an amazing 793 million. And this is, of course, a shocking figure in today's 21st century. We live in an information society, and numbers of that kind mean that all those people are excluded not only from the use of the modern means of communication, but from literacy use of any kind. About two-thirds of the 793 million are women. They are particularly disadvantaged and haven't got learning opportunities in literacy. In terms of where people are located, in fact, 44% of that total are in two countries, that is India and China, with India representing alone 36% of the total of adult illiterates. That makes a total of something over 280 million adults in India alone. And 10 countries are home to 71% of the global adult literate total. In terms of literate rates, we find some very low percentages in Africa. Burkina Faso, Chad are just below or above 30% literacy, respectively, which means, of course, that most of the population don't have access to literacy. And other African countries have rates that are below 50%. These are of great concern to UNESCO, and we are seeking to address that in various ways.
Now, when we use the word literacy, what do we actually mean?
We're talking about a continuum of competencies, and we're also talking about different levels in different contexts. What, just to take a random example, what a rural farmer in, say, northern Kenya needs in terms of literacy competencies may be very different from what a compatriot of theirs in the city of Nairobi requires. And, of course, the same person may, over a course of a lifetime, move from one context to another, achieve more education. So we are talking about a continuum of skills, not really about an absolute threshold. This raises the question, of course, of literacy competence in other countries, of what we normally think of as highly literate countries. Studies in France, where the UNESCO headquarters is located, show that up to 3 million adults have been to school but do not have the level of literacy competence required for their life and work. In other words, we're not talking there about complete illiterate adults. We're talking about people whose level on this continuum is not really adequate for their daily needs. We sometimes talk about people being functionally less literate, if you like, or not having the requisite functional literacy level to show that there's a difference between not ever having had the opportunity to learn and the fact that even if you have had that opportunity, it may not be adequate to your needs.
So what you're saying is to get ahead in today's world, we need to know more than just simple reading and writing.
What I'm saying is that this will vary in different contexts, but in a sense, you're quite right. Literacy in itself was considered in the past, by UNESCO, in fact, and others, to be a sort of absolutely useful value, a threshold. You're either literate or you're not. We've come a long way since then. We understand it differently. We often talk these days about multiple literacies. But you're quite right. The point today is that literacy enables you to do things, and it's only as valuable as the purposes that a community or individual has for the use of written communication. And in today's world, that does include not just, of course, written communication on paper or in print, but also the computer, mobile phones, digital communication, and so on. And in fact, of course, in that context, we're talking about literacy that evolves, literacy that involves text, reading, writing, but it also involves images, it involves icons on the screen, and so on. So it has become a very much more complex and very much more progressive, if you like.
Oh, absolutely. We come up against that kind of obstacle all the time.
Absolutely. We're all faced with this. In our lifetimes, wherever we are, we're all faced with the need to continue to develop and adapt our literacy competences to new environments and new challenges. Absolutely right.
Now, as we were saying, the 8th of September marks this International Day for Literacy. What significance does such a day have, and what's its aim?
Well, this day has been celebrated for over 45 years, and UNESCO has always marked the occasion. It's important. It's important because the promotion of literacy for youth and adults, as opposed, if you like, to children at school, is extremely important and sometimes neglected. The Education for All movement, which has six goals, includes literacy for youth and adults, but it is one of those areas that governments find it hard to allocate adequate resources to. Often only 1% of the education budget goes to adult literacy, although some of the African countries I mentioned have increased that to 3%, and some places even 7%. That's still a small amount, but it's better than the low amounts that have traditionally been assigned to that sector. But it also enables UNESCO to mark particularly good practice in literacy. So there are, in fact, two UNESCO International Literacy Prizes. One is the Confucius Prize, sponsored by the People's Republic of China, and the other, the King Sejong Literacy Prize, sponsored by the Republic of Korea. And these are awarded by UNESCO to programs around the world which are recognized for their good practice. This year, the theme of the Literacy Day is Literacy for Peace, a very important and current theme. And so some of the programs that have been rewarded have given attention to building reconciliation, to breaking down barriers through the use of literacy and communication.
You answered my next question. I was going to ask you about the tie between literacy and peace, which is highlighted this year.
Well, literacy is really a means of communication. It's just as we use oral communication and so on, literacy is about communicating through some form of text. I say some form because often these days it's email, but it might also be paper and print and so on. So as a means of communication, literacy is very important as a means of expressing different cultural identities, of communicating between parties that may be in conflict, developing a consensus, and so on. We hardly notice this as part of our daily lives, but in fact, literacy is a very key means of communication, which is used in building reconciliation and peace as much as it's used in self-expression and more functional development areas and so on.
Now, it's all very well to raise awareness as regarding the terrible numbers of illiterate people, but is there anything private individuals can do, maybe in support of some of the organisations or of UNESCO, working towards this noble aim?
As I said earlier, literacy is an issue in most societies. We don't have to look very far to find communities and groups of people who are struggling to attain the levels and the use of literacy that they need in their daily lives. And I think that in many contexts, one of the things individuals can do is actually volunteer to get alongside, particularly young people who perhaps have not had opportunities at school that they should have had, to help remedy the literacy levels. But there are, of course, many non-governmental organizations in the world which are promoting literacy in developing country contexts, and certainly they are very worthy of support in terms of bringing literacy in relevant ways, contextualized ways, to communities for the purposes that they want to use literacy for.
Would you recognise the Catholic Church contribution in this field, the missions above all?
When we look at the use of literacy, we find that the use of literacy for religious purposes is often a very strong motivation for people to want to learn to read. And the Catholic Church, like other churches and indeed other religions, have been strong promoters of literacy. And many of these efforts have gone beyond religion and have enabled people to use literacy for other development purposes. So certainly where religious organizations, faith-based NGOs and so on are active in literacy, it's often a very strong contribution to the overall effort that we were trying to promote.
So I was referring more to the schools they set up than to the aim of evangelization.
UNESCO recognizes that religious organizations, institutions have their own purposes, of course, and UNESCO is an intergovernmental agency which works with countries from all religious areas of the world and so on. So while recognizing that, UNESCO is particularly concerned that these efforts should also work to enable people to have development opportunities, to develop their potential through education, to use literacy as an adult in ways that are relevant and useful to improve the quality of life.
Yes, and to be able to choose. Knowing what's going on means you can choose the best option.
We haven't mentioned that, but of course some of the impacts of literacy do relate to economic development, to opportunities for employment, to choose new options in life. They also relate to participating in society and taking part in the democratic processes. They also relate to cultural self-expression, often an area that is not much emphasized, but in fact very important. Literacy is also a means for poetry, for stories, for recounting history, for recording and telling, passing on the traditions of societies and communities. And these are also extremely important ways of in which literacy contributes to the quality of life.
Just one last question. What are your hopes for the future working in the area in which you do?
UNESCO will continue to promote literacy. We're coming towards the end now of the United Nations Literacy Decade, which was proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly back in 2003. It comes to an end at the end of next year, 2012. And we're already reflecting how we can go beyond that. We need to continue the efforts. The international community has not devoted adequate levels of attention or effort or financial investment in adult literacy in order to address the problem. Just to illustrate that, the current estimates that the Education for Global Monitoring Report has show that while today, as we said earlier, there are 793 million illiterate adults in the world, estimated, it's estimated that that number will go down only to 711 million by 2015 in another 4 years. This really is not an adequate level of progress. And UNESCO is currently studying ways of working with its member governments to scale up literacy efforts, to accelerate efforts, to extend the reach of literacy programs in appropriate ways to more people so that the rate of progress is faster.
That was UNESCO's Clinton Robinson, a senior program specialist with the education sector. That's all from the English feature program today and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English program. Laudetur Jesus Christus.